Welcome to the Disciplined DNA Podcast. My name is Tommy Caldwell. This podcast is my attempt to turn decades of fitness expertise into actions that get you everything you want for your health. There's nothing more challenging in modern times than getting into great shape. Our primitive instincts constantly pull us away from what we know is best for our health and drive things like overeating, laziness, and constant distraction. But those who harness the power of self-control will win. And that is why we say discipline is the only way to change your DNA. Enjoy the podcast. Welcome everyone to the first ever Disciplined DNA Q&A. DNA Q&A, as it were. I like the way that sounds. And of course, it's the first one because this is only the second recording of the podcast. The third newsletter, I did the newsletter in June, the newsletter in July, and now this will be part of the August newsletter. But last month, I didn't have time to do the recording. So my apologies. It won't be the last time that I've got to skip it. But today, I'm going to do a Q&A. Now, most of these questions came from the Facebook group, which anybody can join. If you just look up Disciplined DNA on Facebook, you can join the group there. I just post things that I think are helpful to people who are trying to get in the best shape of their lives and make fitness and nutrition and these forms of various self-care a lifestyle. If that sounds like something you'd like to be a part of, then come join us at the group. So, there's quite a few questions here, so I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to get right to it. And the first one is a popular one I get all the time, likely because of the amount of posts I make on Instagram about what I feed my kids. Now, for context here, I have a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 7-year-old, and they all eat generally the same. I feed my kids meat, fruit, and vegetables. Some nuts and seeds, some dairy. Anything outside of that is an irregular indulgence, which we'll get into as part of this question. But if I'm feeding my kids, it's going to be meat, fruit, vegetables, and then some other whole foods mixed in there. So people see what my kids eat. And I'm sure a lot of parents look at it and say to themselves, there's no way this guy's kids are eating like this. They probably think I take a picture of their plates and what they're going to eat and then throw it in the garbage and replace it with, I don't know, Fruit Loops. But I promise you that is not the case. So the question is, do your kids actually eat the way that you post about? Have they always eaten like that? And if so, how did you do it? The first answer is obvious, but advice that is rarely followed, and that is lead by example. We don't live in a society where 8 out of 10 adults are overweight to obese because we have a lot of parents out there who are leading by example. And I don't say that to crap on anybody. It's just the way it is. If we have a society of overweight adults, we are going to have a society of overweight children, because the way that you eat in your household is the way that your children are going to eat in your household. And parents love their children more than they love themselves. But the problem with that is that you get into this do as I say, not as I do deal with your kids. And that's not going to work, because even a 3-year-old understands the conflict and the hypocrisy of a parent telling them to do something that they are not willing to do themselves. Now, you might get into a situation where you can get your kid to do the thing you want them to do, even though you are not leading by example. But the best case scenario of that is you have a child who does what you say, but resents you for it, because you're not doing the same thing and you're talking about how important it is and you want them to do this thing, but every day they have to look at you doing the opposite. So is that what you want for yourself as a parent? That's certainly not what I want as a parent. And I'm not perfect with these sorts of things, but if I'm going to tell my children to do something, to behave in a certain way, to follow a certain value system, then I have to be leading by example. So do not expect your children to eat healthy whole foods and not stuff their face with processed food all day long if that's not what you're doing. Not to mention, it's about access as well. So if there's things in the house that you are eating that you are telling your children not to eat, they are eventually going to find their way to those foods that should probably not even exist in your house if it's something that you don't want your family to consume. So that's number one, lead by example. Number two, you have to introduce everything. Or I shouldn't say you have to. Try to introduce everything early. Now, if you have a 13-year-old who's been eating processed food for most of their lives, that's not to say that you can't turn that around, but of course, it becomes more difficult as your child becomes more and more and more exposed to hyperpalatable processed food. So, assuming you have young children, from the first time you give them something other than breast milk or formula, you want to start introducing a wide variety of foods. Now, of course, there's some limitations there. Let's say you start introducing food between the ages of 4 months and 6 months with your infant. There's certainly limitations on what you can feed them and why. But let's say we're getting to the point where your child has no limitations on what they can eat because of their age. You want to expose them to as many healthy whole foods as possible, as often as possible, and cycling through those foods with high repetition, because something that your child says no to or will not eat or has some sort of distaste for when they're 1 year old, a few weeks later that might change. So you don't want to give up on foods just because it's not something that your very young child eats right away. You want to introduce them to a wide variety of foods, different tastes and textures, different fruits, vegetables, meats, things like that, as often as possible, and constantly cycle through those foods. Next, you need to be relentless. These are the rules with my kids. You never have to eat at all, and you never have to eat any of it. But if I put a meal in front of you and you refuse to eat it, you are not getting anything else. And if you come back to me in an hour and complain that you're starving, that meal is going right out in front of your face until you eat a reasonable amount of it. Because I know what I'm feeding my children is good food that tastes good, and they're just trying to see what they can get away with. So let's say I make, I make homemade burgers without the bun, three different sorts of vegetables, right? Some raw vegetables, some cooked vegetables, and then maybe I put a little bit of rice on their plate. And my kid only eats the rice and says, I'm done. I say, okay, you can be done, but don't ask me for a snack. Don't ask me for fruit later. And if you come back and you tell me that you're hungry an hour from now, the part of your meal that you didn't eat is going right back out in front of you. Because children push boundaries in all areas, and food is no different. So as soon as you start to compromise because you're worried about your kid, and little Susie says she's hungry and I can't take it as a parent, she's got to eat something, so now I'm going to give her a bunch of bread or pasta or whatever it is that she asked for. I'm going to give her a bowl of crackers because she needs to eat something. You've been had. I'll tell you something that doesn't happen in the world. Children don't starve themselves to death when there's food in front of them. But to be honest, parents are weak. Modern day parents are weak, and they will bypass reality to serve their own emotional needs. Because as a parent, and I know this isn't supposed to turn into parenting advice, but I'm going to give it anyways. As a parent, your success and the success of your child will be determined by what you say no to, not what you say yes to. Saying yes as a parent is easy, especially if you have the means. Like a parent who says yes to everything that their kid asks for because they have the money to buy their kid whatever they want, how do you think that kid's going to turn out? Food is no different. If you just let your kids eat whatever they want, whenever they want, and you can't handle the complaints, and it's like the same reason we give kids iPads, because we can't be bothered to participate in pushing them into creativity. Whereas like if you leave a kid to complain about being bored for 30 minutes, they will begin using their imagination and find something very constructive to do. But most parents just can't handle their kid complaining for 5 minutes. So they just go, okay, fine. Here's the iPad. Here's the TV. What do you need for me to make you shut up? Food is the same. Our child says, oh, I don't want this. I don't want this again. I'm not going to eat this. I want that. And the parent goes, okay, no problem. You decide. You be the parent now. You tell me what you want. I will give you whatever you want. You teach your kid that they're the boss. You teach your kid that they can have whatever they want, whenever they want it. And with all the hyper palatable processed food that's available today, healthy whole foods that children will love and find delicious now basically turns into eating shredded newspaper because we've completely dulled their sensory system with all the sugar and processed crap that we give them. So don't do that. Introduce everything early. Keep them away from processed foods and be relentless. If you are not willing to do that, you will not have children who eat like my children. Now, when it comes to indulgences, indulgences are allowed in my household. But you need to teach a child what an indulgence is. And you can never let them indulge ad libitum. So let's break that down a little bit. Teach them to understand what an indulgence is. An indulgence is you are eating something that is not good for you, but it is very, very tasty and stimulating. It's okay to have these things on occasion as long as it is on occasion and you're only having a little bit. Too much of this stuff too often makes us unhealthy, causes problems for you down the road, makes it harder for you to have the things you really want for yourself as, like, let's say a young athlete. And we'll talk about that a little bit too. But you need to teach them to understand that an indulgence is something that is not good for you, but has very low negative impact if it's something that we can keep occasional. And you never let them indulge ad libitum. There's no worse thing you can do than say to your kid, okay, well, you know, once a week, we are allowed to have this, and you can have it until you're sick to your stomach. That is a mistake. You decide the portions, you keep the portions small, and you teach your children to go slow, take their time, and really enjoy the indulgence, because this goes for children and adults. That is what an indulgence is supposed to be. A little bit of something that's not great for you that you spend time with and experience and enjoy. Like, think about 100 years ago and every single span of time before that. The sorts of things that we see as indulgences today did not exist. And even fractions of their existence was something that human beings came across very rarely. So that's what an indulgence was. We didn't require these limiting factors as parents because we just didn't even have access to those things. Where, like, if you lived in North America in the early 1900s, to even find fruit that tastes good would be a one-off seasonal thing that you and your family might have the opportunity to enjoy. That's not the world that we live in now. Now we are constantly surrounded both by processing and manufacturing as well as just transportation that gives us access to all foods, no matter the season. This is a completely unnatural way for human beings to live, which is why 8 out of 10 adults are overweight in North America. It's because this sort of access to food is not something that we are evolutionarily designed to cope with. So teaching your kids that an indulgence is a very occasional thing and you never get as much as you want, you will teach them to appreciate those indulgences when they come around. And I also think that most indulgences should be attached to occasions. So, like, celebrations, birthdays, holidays, things like that. You can teach your kids that we eat a little bit differently during these times and we allow things that we don't normally allow because this is a specific occasion where the rules change a little bit and children will understand that. It's when you start giving kids things whenever they ask and it's easier just to let them have it than it is to battle them on it. It's your job as a parent to say no. It is your job as a parent to battle your children. And we understand this in many different places as parents, but we seem to take our foot off the gas when it comes to food. So be relentless. You can teach your kids that this is, you know, this is our family culture. This is a part of our family value system because we want things for ourselves and for our children and for our family. And if from the way that your brain operates, emotional regulation, your ability to thrive emotionally and psychologically as an adult, food is going to play a significant role in that. So I let my kids know, if you want to be big and strong, if you want to be athletic, the girls do dance and gymnastics, and William's more into sports, like he plays hockey, he plays baseball, he plays soccer. I make that relevant to them. These foods are going to, eating this way might feel like a sacrifice, but what you get in return is what you actually want for yourself. But William, you want to be the best athlete possible, then you want to be strong, you want to be healthy, you want to be resilient to injury, you want to recover well. If you want to excel in this area of your life, then you need to put in work in this area of your life. And if you eat this way, it's going to serve you here. If you want to eat this other way, then it's going to hinder what you actually want for yourself in this area of your life. And you're teaching your children that there is positive effects of good foods and negative effects of bad foods. We've moved away from being able to teach our children right and wrong, good and bad. Oh, don't call that good and don't call that bad because you're gonna. No, there's good things and there's bad things, and there needs to be a line drawn, and your kids will get it. But you have to explain it to them properly as a parent. Now, it took me 15 minutes to answer that question, and I've got a lot here, so we'll see how much we get through. Non-parenting questions should move by a little bit more quickly. Next one, what should I eat after my workout? This will be much simpler. The first thing I'm going to say when it comes to post-workout nutrition is you should not rush food, especially if body composition, fat loss, these sorts of things are more important for you than performances. And for the average person listening to this, you care more about how your body looks than you care about your ability to run a 100 meter sprint within a certain amount of time. So post exercise, your peak fat burning is going to be between 2 to 4 hours post exercise. That's like your big quote unquote fat burning window. As soon as you eat, you are going to blunt that fat burning process. So people who care more about body composition and more of the lifestyle benefits of things related to exercise and nutrition, I say you don't want to eat right after you work out. You want to wait till between, you know, 2 to 4 hours after your workout, somewhere between there. Of course, you know, schedules, convenience, they're all going to play a role here, but assuming you have complete control over what you eat, I would wait 2 hours until I ate after my workout. Unless performance is your goal, muscle gain matters more to you than anything else, then yeah, go ahead and shorten that window. But most people weigh too much and have too much fat and are looking to reverse that. So assuming that's you, first things first, do not eat right after your workout. Give it a couple hours and then go and eat. Aside from that, I would say you want to maximize your protein intake, and you want low to moderate fat and carbohydrates, and have a fairly well-rounded meal that is heavy on the protein. Now, for carbohydrates that are more on the starchy side, whether that's root vegetables, whether that's rice, pasta, things like that, not that I'd necessarily recommend consuming grains, and we'll get to that in a later question, but assuming that's going to be a part of your diet, that's usually the best time to consume those types of foods that are higher on the carbohydrate side. So maximize your protein, have, you know, low to moderate fat in there, and same low to moderate amount of carbohydrates. And if you consume starchy carbohydrates, that would be the time to eat them. So an example would be You know, like 8 ounces of beef or fish, some mixed above ground vegetables, and then you could add in some berries or some root vegetables or a cup of rice, something like that. That'll do it for you as far as post-workout nutrition. Another question about kids, but not I'll keep the parenting rant out of here. What should I feed my kids before sports? First thing is don't feed them too much. The second thing is don't feed them too close to the exercise. I wouldn't give my kids, if it's more on like the small portion snack side, I would say an hour outside of whatever sport they're participating in is fine. If you're going to give them a full meal, I think you got to give them at least 2 hours. Children likely are going to digest food a little bit more efficiently and effectively than an adult, but I still, like, you know what it's like if you're trying to be active with a giant lump in your stomach. I would discourage feeding your children too close to exercise. But assuming this isn't a meal, it's just, hey, my kid, I want them to have a little something before they go out on the field or the ice or the court. Let's say give them at least an hour. And then you want an even mix of protein, fat, and carbs for children. You want a little bit of everything for the most part. Children are not like adults in that they're going to do better with more carbohydrates and more fat and more high energy foods, assuming they're an active child and those fats and carbohydrates are not coming from processed refined foods. Children require more on the energy side of food. What you're not going to give them is sugar, water, and refined carbohydrates, like all of these marketed processed foods that are like, oh, it's, you know, you need this for sports. You need 50 grams. You need 50 grams of liquid sugar because you're an athlete. No, do not give those things to your kids. Here's an example of what I would give my children. A few pepperettes and maybe some cheese and a bowl of mixed berries. That's what my kid's going to get. Or William really likes canned tuna, which as long as it's something like skipjack, you don't really have to worry about the mercury so much. But mix them up some tuna with a little bit of mayonnaise, some mixed fruit, just stuff like that. There's no real specific thing you're going to give your kid before sports that is going to make them perform like an elite athlete. The goal is give them a little bit of energy without making them feel disgusting and bloated before they go out and run around and perform whatever activity they're going to perform, and just have it well-rounded and no refined processed foods. Don't get tricked. Like, even things like BioSteel or giving your kid like a protein shake, until your child is coming through the other end of puberty or deep into puberty, thinking about like maximizing protein intake and giving your kids supplements and all these things is a complete and absolute waste of time. And I can only assume there's going to be more of cost than benefit when it comes to those things. So just feed your kids whole food, feed them an even mix. And what's more important is not feeding them too much or too little, too close to the type of exercise you're going to do. Next question, what are the best types of protein? Now, there's going to be some controversy here. My answer is without question, animal protein. If we're talking about animal versus plant, animal protein. Now, plant protein is okay, and especially with modern day processing where we're removing a lot of the starch and really focusing in on the protein side of a plant protein. It's like plant protein is okay, but if we're talking about what's optimal, animal protein is going to be optimal. It's going to be more bioavailable. You're going to have less digestive distress unless you're someone who's lactose intolerant and you use a whey protein that has lactose in it. Of course, that's a different kind of issue than what I'm talking about right now. But I'm just saying that this isn't an absolute rule. But animal protein is going to be more easily absorbed. It's going to be more bioavailable. You're going to get more protein gram per gram per calorie than you are versus a plant protein, which is going to be a little bit more carbohydrate heavy, which isn't, it's not like that's a big deal. But if we're talking about what is most effective and a more efficient way to get the most amount of quality protein, it's going to be animal. You can get that through food primarily. supplementation is helpful, but I'm not someone who's all that big on supplements. I think people, the more you lean on supplements, you're probably doing less of the important work when it comes to actual diet and nutrition. The more you focus on being effective in your diet from a whole foods perspective, the less you are going to require any form of supplementation. But if we are talking about protein supplements, whey protein, whatever kind you find you digest best when it comes to different types of whey proteins, it's really up to you. Whether it's, you know, whey protein isolate or whey protein concentrate, I think these sorts of conversations aren't all that helpful. Just get a whey protein that tastes good and doesn't cause you digestive upset. Essential amino acids are helpful, much more helpful than something like a BCAA. You want EAAs. Essential amino acids are typically going to do more for muscle growth and muscle preservation, especially if you're exercising and you exercise fasted or with less food, then an essential amino acid can be very helpful. And if you are, for some reason, stuck on plant protein, rice or pea are usually the best, in my experience. But you get into the problem with plant proteins of quality and source and where these foods are coming from, what kind of soil that they're grown in, what kind of chemicals and pesticides are sprayed on the things that end up getting manufactured down into the protein that you consume. But if you're someone who says, no animal protein for me, I'm only plant, fine. I'm not gonna fight with you about it. Rice or pea is usually better, but I would be even more, it sounds like it's the opposite, but I would be more diligent about the sources of my plant proteins than I would be about the sources of my animal proteins. And that's not to say that animal proteins can't come with their source problems. Of course they do, especially if you're talking about just like meat and factory farms. Of course there are issues there. But when it comes to protein supplementation, I'd be much more concerned about where my plant protein is coming from. Okay, what would you consider good versus bad calories? This will be pretty easy to answer. Good equals close to nature. Bad equals highly refined and separated from natural form. Now, of course, there's lots of foods that go through some sort of processing that there's no problem with them at all. In fact, there's some foods that going through processing actually makes them better for you, especially when it comes to different sorts of plant foods that we refine or process to make them more digestible. Like, think about something like bread. Not that I think people should be eating a bunch of bread, but eating bread is probably better for you than chewing on and eating wheat stalks. Outside of that, no sugar, no seed oils or refined foods. To me, those are bad calories. Processed foods, hyperpalatable processed foods, sugar, seed oils, and refined foods I would avoid at all costs, and eat mostly meat, fruit, and vegetables in that order. Meat, I think, it should be, most people's diets should be centralized around quality protein and quality meats. Fruit, the reason why I say fruit before vegetables is because you're going to get lots of micronutrients from fruits that people go to vegetables for. But fruit is usually much more digestible with less intolerances and issues that people get with vegetables. And now that's not me, you know, pooping on vegetables, but there's so many different types of vegetables from so many different families, and people have lots of intolerances to different families of vegetables. Like when you think about things like the nightshade category, or just people who have poor digestion or irritated bowels, then even things like greens become a problem for people. So I would say meat, fruit, and vegetables, and then maybe some nuts and seeds, eggs, and dairy. The reason why I say maybe is because a significant amount of people are intolerant to nuts and seeds, eggs, and dairy. Of course, not everybody, but everyone is probably intolerant to at least one of those things, dairy, eggs, or nuts and seeds. So as much as I would consider them healthy whole foods, you're going to run into many more problems as far as intolerance and digestibility when it comes to nuts and seeds, eggs and dairy, than you're going to compare it to meat, fruit and vegetables. But that's what I would consider the good calories: meat, fruit, vegetables, maybe nuts and seeds, eggs and dairy. When it comes to things like bread, pasta, rice, and those other grain-based starches, they're neutral at best. It's not that you can't eat them or shouldn't eat them. It's just they're not really doing anything for you aside from they're very palatable and they can be more of the fun side of whole foods. And if you need that in your life, then yeah, go ahead and eat them. Just be careful not to overdo it. But they're not beneficial. It's all marketing. When you look at grain manufacturers talking about all the vitamins and minerals that are in their, you know, cereal or their pasta or their bread, that's really just savvy marketing. Those sorts of starches and grains are at best neutral. So you can have them, but don't pretend that they're good for you. How can you recover better after a workout, particularly from hard cardiovascular training? Number one, sleep is going to be most important. The sleep quality, sleep duration, the time you get to bed, how long you stay in bed for. So if you're having trouble recovering after a workout, going to bed earlier and sleeping longer is going to be the absolute best thing you can do for yourself. Second to that, you want to make sure that you're having adequate hydration as well as adequate electrolytes. So, if you're someone who eats well and exercises daily and exercises fairly intensely, you probably need to supplement with a little bit more salt in your diet, which is as simple as, you know, salting your food. Or you can use some form of electrolyte supplement like Element is a brand, Rob Wolf's brand, that makes a very popular hydration electrolyte product. But adequate hydration is important, especially replacing electrolytes if you're a very active person. Especially if you're like me and you're particularly sweaty, you're going to want to make sure that you're doing a little bit more. And that's when I would say on the supplementation side, supplementing with electrolytes when you are a highly active individual is probably something you should consider. Evening movement, which is less about the movement and more about not just sitting around on your ass all day after you work out, whether that's going for a walk in the evening, doing some stretches, yoga, mobility in the basement, rather than just sitting on the couch for 3 hours straight, that's going to help you recover. And then if those things don't work, getting more sleep, adequately hydrating and replacing electrolytes, and not being so stagnant in the evening, if you find that you're still having problems with recovery, then you need to control your output, assuming that it's too high. Because if you spend more time recovering than you do exercising, that's going to be a bit of a problem. And daily frequent movement is going to be better for you and more important for you than these really intense bursts of psychotic exercise that require 2 days of doing absolutely nothing to recover from. You might have to adjust your output. And it might be less about recovery and more about the intensity of the exercise when you are performing it. Only two questions left, so we're going to get through this in a reasonable amount of time. How do you fuel the body properly for exercise? Now, we talked about this in kids. This will be more on the adult side. And I'll talk a little bit about what I do because it's important to have context here. I do not eat before exercise. There's a lot of reasons for that, mainly that food just becomes a productivity problem for me in all ways during the day. When I eat, it's not just the time that it takes for me to prepare my food, but also after I eat, it takes me like an hour and a half to recover from it. So I find both with productivity professionally at work, as well as productivity with my exercise, as far as how I feel, I do better without food. Chances are that's not you, okay? It might be, you're gonna require, if you're used to eating before exercise, it's not like tomorrow you can wake up and not eat and go exercise and you're gonna feel great. It will take you a while to adapt to that type of change, but just because I do it doesn't mean you should. And most people should probably have some food in their system before they exercise. It just doesn't work for me, so I don't do it, and I feel better without food. So I just want, you know, I want to contextualize that before I answer. Keep in mind, I don't eat anything before I work out. But those who do likely want a moderate amount of protein, a low to moderate amount of fat, probably more on the low side, because even though protein takes a lot of energy to digest and fat uses very little energy to digest, fat is usually the nutrient that hangs around a little bit longer and doesn't make us feel great. So a moderate amount of protein, lower amount of fat, and then a low to moderate amount of carbohydrates, which of course you don't have to have, but you also don't have to be eating. But something reasonably well-rounded, lower on the fat side, and try and keep your food at least 2 hours outside of exercise, and don't eat too much. It's probably more important than anything else. You want enough food that you're fueling your workout, but not so much that it becomes a barrier to you being able to exercise the way that you want to. If you are someone who exercises fasted and you feel good doing that, this is when it's a good time to have essential amino acids during the workout, or some whey protein can be helpful during the workout, just so that you're not catabolizing all of your lean mass. Because that is a downside of fasted exercise, is your body is going to demand nutrients from somewhere. Some of that is going to come from body fat, but some of that is going to come from your muscle as well. So something like EAAs, it's hard to say that you're always going to be able to get the best of both worlds, but consuming essential amino acids during the workout is likely going to help preserve some of your muscle mass while still being able to adequately burn fat throughout the workout. If I do essential amino acids or whey, what I usually do is I start my workouts with like a 30-minute cycle, like on a bike cycle. So I do that fasted or with water only. So I have 30 minutes of purely fasted exercise, and then I'll consume the amino acids or whey throughout the rest of the workout while I'm doing more of my resistance training. And I think that adequately answers the question. Don't eat too much. Don't eat too close to the workout. You want moderate protein, lower on the fat side, low to moderate carbohydrates, depending on, you know, what your carbohydrate intake typically is. And if you're fasted, add in some amino acids or whey. If you're like me, I like to get some purely fasted exercise in, so you can have just water for the first 30 minutes of your workout and then add in whatever you supplement with in the second half of the workout. Last question. We're gonna do this in 40 minutes. I'm happy with my efficiency throughout the rest of this thing. Is stretching helpful for recovery? Not uniquely. And what I mean by that is sleep, nutrition, and the proper cycling of different movements and body parts between workouts is going to be way more important. So if you're not sleeping well, if you're not eating well, if you're always doing the same kind of exercise every single day, then stretching is probably not going to do that much to help you recover. And it's not that light movement like stretching really helps in the recovery. It's that exercising at a higher intensity and then just being completely immobile for the next 24 hours lends itself to greater stiffness and soreness. And of course, there's benefits to stretching and mobility. I'm not saying there isn't. What I'm saying is when it comes to specifically in improving recovery from exercise, I don't know that it's the movement itself that is more helpful than just the fact that you're not completely immobilized, which is going to lend itself to greater stiffness. And again, if recovery is constantly an issue, then there's something that you need to change. Like if you find that you're never recovering from your workouts, chances are it has very little to do with your lack of stretching and more to do with your lack of sleep, your poor nutrition, or just the nature of the exercise that you're doing needs to be changed up. Probably more variety, more varying intensity rather than being intense all the time. And stretching is probably not the limiting factor on your recovery. Okay, that's it. That is all the questions. Again, if for the next Q&A, which will happen completely randomly when I don't have time to put together a different kind of episode, if you want to submit questions, please join the Disciplined DNA group on Facebook, on the Facebook page there. You can also hit up my direct messages on Instagram at TommyCaldwell_Insta. But I actually didn't ask for questions on Instagram today because I had so many in the group. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I hope you get something from this podcast and from this episode. And remember, those who persist win. The people who stay in the fitness game the longest, as far as waking up every day, moving, doing the best they can, eating well, it's only a matter of time until you succeed. The people who fail are the people who quit. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Be sure to join the Disciplined DNA group on Facebook and follow me on Instagram at TommyCaldwell_Insta.